So the title of the talk this evening, you could call it Kind Eyes and Kind Mind. And I think most of us will feel that most of our life, daily life, we're somehow busy coping and managing. That the need to manage, the need to cope, money, house, relationships, work, politics, disease, health, bitoklumi, whatever you like, the whole thing, it seems that it captures, we are captured by this need to survive, to cope. Well, I can tell you that it's universal, and the cats here and the birds outside are probably saying the same thing. Why do I, my whole life, I'm busy trying to find out where the food is and where I can be safe for my children, and how do I cope, and how, what was my relationships with the other cats and the other birds and the and it's bearing in mind what we heard from Simi yesterday about the importance of the first noble truth of acknowledging our struggle, acknowledging suffering. It doesn't mean that life is suffering. Life is just life. But our relationship to it is often built from the need to survive. Once we're born in a body, the kind of the universe put us in a body, made a body, and then we have to keep going somehow. So the universe made us a body, and also the birds and the cats, and all beings born in a body are busy with surviving. But also, there is joy, and there is peace, and there is bliss, and it's not all suffering. It's our relationship to it is where the difficulty arises, not in life itself. The Dharma direction of working with this issue is that we need to get close to our experience, what our experience really is made of, what it is that we really experience, and there we will see the pressure that creates suffering, the pressure to survive, also the joy, also the peace. We'll see the whole galaxy of experiences, because that's where the issues are. And the Buddhist teaching is saying, be clear and aware of our experience, and hold our experience like in the palm of our hands with love and care, and there is where we come out of that box of struggle, that place of struggle. It's interesting that the deepest, I would say the most basic Buddhist teaching is Paticca Samuppada, which is dependent origination. Never mind what it is, if you've not heard of it. But it's a really deep teaching of how we make our world, how we make the world that we then live in, how we believe what we see, and then we're inside it. And it's a very detailed and beautiful way of how we build our journey to awakening, to freedom, or to difficulty and struggle. And it's the basis of Buddhist psychology. But what's interesting is that the way we make our world is kind of sankharas, constructions, the way we fabricate our world, we construct our world. is there before consciousness. It's already built into the karma, to the whole system. And then we have our consciousness that knows a world that we already made. So the challenge is to free the consciousness. I'll give you an example. Consciousness, awareness, grasps an object. When it grasps and looks at an object, a person, a thing, an object, an idea, a colour, a thought, a tree, when it looks at that object, the consciousness becomes, takes the shape of that object. Consciousness itself is totally free, but it keeps taking the shape of what it's looking at. So it's like my hand takes the shape of this stick. The consciousness does the same. When that happens, my hand is, I can't use it for anything. The hand is stuck. It's taken the shape of this object. When the hand is open, it can do anything. Once it's taken the shape of what it's holding, it's grasping, it's stuck. I can't do anything else with it. I have to let go. Same with the consciousness. And it's just interesting that what we're doing here, in a way, is exploring what is consciousness that grasps things and what is consciousness that is a bit freer, that is just knowing and present and being, and therefore more open. So we can ask a question, what kind of consciousness isn't stuck with coping with life and struggle? And it's a consciousness that is not grasping things, that is open, and it's a consciousness that is loving and aware. And that openness, we can discover it more and more. As we're sitting here meditating, a lot of what we're doing is kind of touching more basic places in us that is not just about grasping something, but is about being and about caring. We're going to be talking more in this retreat. We're moving more towards what you might call the two wings of the bird that allow it to fly. It's a very classic image in the Dharma. Wisdom and compassion are often seen as two wings of the bird. Heart, mind are together. They're not two separate worlds. Wisdom and compassion allow the bird to fly with two wings, not just one wing. So what kind of seeing then undoes the sense of being stuck in coping and our consciousness being stuck in what it sees and a thought and an issue and a problem? And what kind of... One thing that we are learning here is that to make our experience more workable, workable gamish, like dough, lalush, to that we can knead dough. I have a very strong relationship with this because when I came to Klil for 15 years, I was growing our own wheat in a field, which I would go every day, every season, and throw seeds and harvest it, take it back, grind it, and make bread every day for my family. And so this action of kneading the dough, in Hebrew lalush, is nice action. I can feel it now in my fingers. But it's where we can do that with our experience, that our experience is workable. We can't say we can solve the problems, but we can say, wait a minute, what I can do can't necessarily rewrite the script. And Simi was giving some sense that, yes, we can change things in the mind. We can move towards what's healthy and what's nutrition for us. Yes, we can. But it doesn't happen by magic. But what we are learning here is, if I can hold my experience with love and attention, then something, it begins to be workable. It begins to be, I see that it's passing. I see that it's not stuck. I don't need to believe everything. I have an example that maybe I mentioned it some time ago, so you might have heard it from me before, but it was... some months ago, we have loads of wild pigs, Chazirei Bar, in Klil. And they really come around our house, and they upset things, and they destroy things, and they dig up trees, and they break things, and the dogs are going crazy and barking all night, and the pigs are just kind of just doing their thing and making a big balagan, big. So one morning at 4 o'clock, which I often get up at that time, their dogs are barking and barking, and I said, oh, here they go again, there's the pigs again. I went out with a torch to try and sort of push the pigs away. And I went out with a view inside me, oh, the pigs, the problem, their problem. They're like, it's just a sankhara, it's just exactly that construction. My mind was already closed into a view that the pigs are a problem, right? It was somehow, it wasn't heavy, but it was definitely there. Already the mind was already... And then I saw three pigs. They were quite big. But they were playing catch around a tree. Catch me. Tofes? Okay. Tofeset. One went behind the tree and the other two went this way. So this one went the other way, so the other two went that way. And they had their tails up in the air like this. And they were playing around the tree like little children. They weren't so little. They were quite big, but they were still playing. And all of a sudden my heart melted. And what was important for me was that I saw that I had been stuck in a view which was exactly a sankhara, that conditioned my consciousness to say, pigs are a problem. And here the pigs were telling me, they're my teachers. Don't believe your views. Don't believe your thoughts. Don't believe your stuck mind. Your mind should be gamish, flexible. And you can love us too, says the pigs. We're just happy beings. They're just an example of the way kindness and noticing and paying attention changes things in us in the way we relate to our experience. We need to cut through the difficulty. We need a seeing that cuts through difficulty, cuts through the assumption, the hanachot, the basis of life as struggle. And it's not so easy to see that, because one of the problems is the seeing is seeing thought, so there is a circle there. That if we have to understand what is seeing here, because otherwise it's thinking about thinking. And an old image is like a traditional image. The eyes can't see the eyes. We need a seeing that can look at our experience, which is not the same as the experience itself. We need a seeing that is able to look at experience. Otherwise, it's thought trying to look at thought, and we're still in the same loop. It doesn't really work. So what seeing stands outside and is able to look at our experience? What's the Buddha eye that can stand back? And we're doing it here, but I want to give it some clarity and so the tradition is that it's a seeing that works, a seeing that undoes lefarek, that takes to pieces what is assumed and what is believed and what is constructed in our minds, a seeing that begins to open it and take it to pieces. The Buddha's awakening allowed him to see that what we know is based on conditions, that everything is based on conditions, that everything that we know is arising from somewhere else, that everything we know is built from elements and is not one thing, that every experience is made of many, many parts to it, and that we can see through things that we believe to be solid. In other words, the consciousness believes this to be solid and grasps it, but if we look at it carefully, maybe it's not so solid as we think. The description, an image in the tradition is, if we look at a bubble, we think it's a thing. But if we look at it with clear eyes, clear seeing, we see it's empty. It's made of nothing. So the Buddha, in his awakening and giving his methods and so on, he said that the practice that we're doing, meditation practice and Eightfold Path, is to see with insight, to look at things as they really are, rather than being in the illusion that they're solid and existing and we believe in them and they are, this is the world and there's nothing I can do. No, it's all flexible, it's all fluid, it's all conditioning, it's all conditioned. It's made from conditions. We are made from conditions, this body. This mind is made from conditions. We're not born fully like that. We grow into being a person that we are. And what is the seeing that does this? What kind of seeing in the traditional texts, what kind of seeing allowed the Buddha to have the insights into an awakened mind? And here's a whole interesting teaching. The seeing is called yoniso manasikara. And in the Pali language. And yoniso is coming from the same word in the Sanskrit, yoni, which is the birth canal, which is the womb. So yoniso is female, is feminine. It's a seeing that gives birth. It's not a seeing that's abstract, that's theoretical, that's just chokhmah, wisdom, turning circles. It's a seeing that gives birth, and it's a seeing that's feminine. And manasikara just means the consciousness meeting something and making a picture. It just means the consciousness active. So active consciousness, which is feminine. I don't want to use this word feminine too much because it's got its own stories, but it's different from analytic. It's much more a seeing that gives birth, that is fruit, that brings fruit, It's like Bina in the Kabbalah. Bina is the feminine. Chochmah is the male, masculine, but Bina is the feminine. So it's in the traditional kind of Kabbalistic teaching, it's similar to Bina. It's looking deeply that brings fruit. It's defined as looking underneath, not on the top of things. It's going deeply into, inside. It's penetrating. It's close and not distant. It's intuitive. It's immediate. You could say beli tivuch, without a kind of intermediate stage. It sees things as they are. Immediate, right there, intuition, knowing, this is it. And it's very close. And that's why we use these words all the time in the teaching here. You've had these words from both of us already. Intimacy, closeness, getting in touch, listening, hakshava, keshev. So that's the kind of seeing that we're developing in meditation, and it's not the same as analytic thinking about. It's being in the thing that we're seeing, that we're looking at. Going inside it, getting close to it. And because of that, there is heart and mind. There is kindness and caring, because you can't go close, you can't be intimate without that heart. The heart brings us right there. Intuition needs heart. Immediate knowing needs heart. The heart and the mind are together. And a female kind of knowing is heart-mind, like a mother that is looking after. It's not a mind, it's a heart-mind. So we're developing it here in this retreat and in the Dharma practice altogether, not just through mind-heart looking at. It needs the whole path. It needs the Eightfold Path, as we heard yesterday. It's a lived journey. We can't think our way to happiness. We can't think our way to liberation. We need to live it. So the seeing is part of we live this practice. It's a living experience. So a few examples. One example that I like is, just because it's so classic, everyone knows it, but we forget about it, is the story of the emperor's new clothes. It's just absolutely right. The whole, you know the story about the Caesar with the, who's naked, but all the population said, oh, lovely suit you have. And everyone is kind of basically conditioned, and good adults saying what is expected. So they all say, yes, yes, you have a beautiful suit, but this one boy looks fresh and new and says, but the emperor's naked. And they all try and shut him up. There is there's many images like this, and one of them is somewhat similar. Magician is performing tricks at the crossroads, like they do in India. And a whole bunch of people come round, and he's performing amazing tricks. And Everyone believes, wow, look what he can do. But a boy also goes round the back and sees what the tricks are made of. And that's the seeing that we're looking for here. We go around the back of things, we go under things, we go inside things, and we see what the experience is made of, how we build our world, and then believe it. It needs us to question reality. It needs us to look again, not first look. Look again and again and again. Imagine we're looking at a movie. Say, it's an amazing movie. Wow, look at this. Supposing we were experienced at making movies. So instead of looking at the story, we would see how the director did this shot and how where the director stood and where the cameraman was standing and how this was constructed and what the actors were told to do and what they didn't do and all the games being played. It's that sense of stepping behind the apparent, what it seems to be. We see that things are moving. Nothing is fixed. We see that when we believe something to be the way it is, even a tree, that we believe a tree to be like this, it has a limited validity. Eravon Mugbal. I learned that in Hebrew. It is questionable. What is it that we are seeing? We are constructed. Our brain is constructed to see a tree like that. That means the tree and the brain have a kind of plot. They're together. Or shall we say human consensus, human beings agree that the tree has to be this. And the tree says, well, okay, whatever you say. We need to keep questioning. We need to keep opening. A lot of practice in Zen is not about meditation at all. There is Zazen in meditation, it's true. But there are also places in Zen where they have no meditation. They just simply ask questions that have no answer. And then they stay and disturb and undo the world slowly, slowly, forever, to take the world to pieces. They're questions that don't have any answer. Like, what was the face? What was your face before you were conceived? When you're not even a sperm and an egg, who were you? So what do you do with that? It just goes round and round and round, and then you give up, and then something happens. We need kindness for that. We need both kind eyes. We need the eyes and the kindness. They both work together. I'm sure many of you have felt how good it is and how much power you feel when your heart and your mind are coordinated and in one place. Are together. When the heart and mind working together, enthusiasm and wisdom and awareness, and you've got a project and you're all collected together and your heart is on fire and your mind is active and you can do anything. The heart and the mind together is a big power. Kind eyes, we need both. They're two of them. It's like wisdom and compassion, the two of them. When we practice here, we're looking at the body, for example, looking at the breath. How does this yoniso manasikara work when we're looking at the breath? No distance. We're right there with it. We feel it's flowing through us. We feel we're dancing with the breath. We look underneath and we find that the breath is conditioned by all kinds of things. Right now there's some tension in the body and the breath is shorter. Right now I feel like this and the breath is bigger. Right now there's the beginning and the end. Right now there is rough, smooth. Right now there's release and joy in this breathing. Right now this breathing is tight. Right now the breathing connecting me to the breath of the world. Everything is breathing with me right now. How many places one breath can take us? So our power to be with, intimate, close, caring, and awake with what is really happening, with our experiences as they arise. And we begin to see that our experience is made of many things and it's not what we thought it was. We can challenge it. We open it. And then we're not inside it anymore. And we're not closed anymore inside our struggle. We look at a thought in this way. How do we do that? Same way. Intimate with our thoughts, kind to our thoughts, seeing that they are not solid. We don't need to believe them, but we do know them. We appreciate them. We allow them, but we don't need to be controlled by them, or we don't need to believe them to be absolutely true. Which is impossible. If any of us look at our thoughts, everyone here is going to say, what? I need to believe all that stuff? That mess in my mind? Of course I don't believe it. The trouble is, Ki'ilu, we do believe it. It tends to control us. But if we look carefully at the mess, think, how on earth? What the hell? This lot, this... all these babbling voices, cacophony controls me, this cacophony, cacophonia. But we can look at it differently. The mind is also beautiful. Thoughts are beautiful. There are voices that are talking to us. They're voices of the world. They can also say, give us the poems, the poetry. They can give us vision. And anything that we know, once we look at it with these two, with kind and with eyes, anything, even if it looks really heavy, difficult. For example, anger. You say, how on earth? I mean, anger is just so strong. How can I use yoniso manasikara with anger? But you can. This feminine, more female, caring closeness, if we can, even for a moment, see the way the anger arises in us, with that awareness. All of a sudden the anger is not 100%. The anger, we begin to see where it's coming from. We begin to see its power. We begin to see its conditions, what made it. We begin to see the button that was pressed in us. We begin to see maybe the other person that did it. And look with new eyes at this other person. We begin to see anger as a power. Also, even a power that's positive and that we can use it. We can ride on it. In Tantra, there's a lot of work with anger. as a spiritual power. We can, it becomes workable, this anger. And less controlling, but more in relationship to. We are going into relationship with anger rather than just being under it. So it happens with everything. We can, looking with kind eyes, begins to open everything, begins to melt. Everything becomes workable, flexible. We have a relationship with it and not just an automat. There's even love behind anger. We can notice layers with this penetrating look. We notice that everything's built from layers. There's love, protection, looking after myself. I'm looking after myself so that anger is coming from like a biological response to threat. But there's something there that is looking, that is holding ourselves. We see many layers and many, many aspects. And kind eyes also brings us to awakening. We begin to understand that awakening is not just another experience, that awakening is behind experience, that experiences come and go, but there's something that stays, there's something that changes in us. Awakening is a state, again, which grows as we develop in this path. Kind eyes is really essential, but it's also, we also live this path. Awakening is not an experience. It's a movement to being in another place. And this soft, immediate, knowing, aware awareness behind our experience gradually takes us there. Experiences will come and go, but an awakened mind will just kiss them as they pass by. In the words of William Blake. So I want to finish with a sentence from Nisargadatta Maharaj, which is really summarizing the two wings, the kind and the eyes, or the wisdom and the compassion. It's one of the most beautiful quotes that I know from any great teacher. He says, "Wisdom teaches me that I am nothing. Love tells me that I am everything. And between the two, my life flows." It's beautiful. Wisdom teaches me that I'm nothing. Love tells me that I'm everything. And between the two, my life flows. So let's take a few minutes of quiet now.